Joint Committee on Ways and Means, February 3rd, 2005. Will those people that are going to be presenting come up? And Ms. Fleming, I guess you'll be starting off, and we'll get started here. And we're going to try to get through all the sort of basic areas for the Department of Education today and then go on to some other areas. But we will be seeing representatives of the Department of Education all next week.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. Nice to be back for our fourth day. We have, again, changed, I think, the order, and our plan this morning is to just begin right away with the discussion about our programs, our priorities, and our budget reduction options so that you can have the full detail of that. Any point along the way, if we need to go into more detail, we can. If there is time at the end of the hearing this morning, we'd be happy to go back and answer any of your questions about federal programs that we ended our day with yesterday. So with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Brett West and let him start through the spreadsheets.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brett West, Assistant Superintendent for Finance Administration. And the document we'll be looking at today is the set of legal-sized pages that were tucked inside the front of the binder that you received. I would like to say that we know that we're the first ones through here on this kind of exercise for you, so hopefully we'll meet your expectations. For each of these, we have a description, a little bit of a crosswalk for our priority areas. And you'll see on the first page, we'll be talking about department operations first. One thing I would like to acknowledge is that we did prioritize our programs. It was a difficult exercise because most of what we do, especially in the department operations, but also in grant and aid and everywhere else, is interrelated. And prioritizing those is to some extent an exercise just to kind of give you an idea of what we do and how we do it. I would like to also start off just letting you know that as we work through the department operations piece, I was probably not as clear as I could have been with some of the assistant superintendents in the office, and we ended up with some program monitoring activities ending up in the leadership area rather than accountability. Most of our efforts around program monitoring should be in accountability, so the spreadsheet that you have has overstated leadership and understated accountability. I can give you the actual numbers, but I wanted to make sure that you knew right up front that that was something that needs to be changed on this spreadsheet. So if I could give you that piece of detail first, on page one, for the accountability exercise, when we add in special ed program monitoring, the general fund total becomes $2,796,885.
Again, please.
$2,796,885. And that replaces the $2,211,000 number. For other funds, the number increases to $5,248,509.
Again, please.
$5,248,509.
Thank you.
And the federal funds piece increases to $9,878,575. So the total for all funds there then becomes $17,923,969. The same reductions then to the leadership category down on the fourth priority area, the fifth line. Instead of $3.9 million for general fund, leadership becomes $3,376,927. For the other funds category, it becomes $605,611. And the federal funds piece becomes $2,009,982. And so the all funds total for that becomes $5,992,520.
Chair Devlin and members of the committee, I just, before we deep dive into the detail of this spreadsheet, I want to point out something I think that's fairly significant in light of our conversation about the reorganization of the agency. 2 years ago, we couldn't have done a budget that was aligned around functions and activities. We had people, we had grant programs, we had a variety of things that we identified that people did in the agency, but no way to align those to the clarified core mission of the things that we're responsible for doing. So this is new, not only to you, but to us as well, and we have a great deal of detail underneath this that we've done to be able to unpack everything that happens in the agency and roll it up to where you can see that accountability, leadership, and school improvement and the superintendent's initiatives are very clearly identified and the costs assigned to those accurately.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the next thing I would like you to do so that you have an understanding of how we have displayed this information is turn to the second page, which has a description of each one of these program areas, a brief description of what we do and who within the office does them. So, for example, the accountability function that we're displaying is ensuring that fiscal resources are used appropriately and that school district performance meets state and federal expectations. This work is conducted by all offices within the Department of Education, and some specific activities under that line item are, as I said earlier, program monitoring for our state and federal programs, audits. We review all the audits that come in from local school districts. We review their budgets. Legal activities, because we do have a significant amount of work that we do with the Department of Justice to interpret laws and statutes and other things like that. We do background checks for all school employees, LEDS checks, fingerprints checks. LEDS is the law enforcement data system, so that we can see if any school employee has any criminal history and they cannot go to work or become a bus driver if they do. We do performance review and measurement there, and we do a lot of data analysis there. So some specific examples of things that we do around the accountability function. Again, on the second page, we've further broken out our program option package. We had one program option package funded in the governor's budget, $1.8 million for the...
I'm not following. On the second page?
Second page.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, the second page where we have the descriptions of accountability, integrated data system, and assessment, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the integrated data system is what we have had included in the governor's budget so that we can begin the work of coming to a common system for reporting reporting from local school districts to us the data that we need for the accountability efforts that you see above. I think some important pieces on that are that the work is pretty complex, and the work that we'll be doing next biennium includes developing requirements analysis so that we can bring all the 198 school districts and 20 ESD systems together, determining some governance issues because there are those kind of issues between state and local government units, and funding to actually do the project, which will be implemented in 0709 if you so desire. We have split out the assessment costs as a separate category, and assessment probably easy enough to understand on the face of it, the development and administration of Oregon's assessment system, primarily carried out by the Office of Assessment and Information Services. The next activity we've broken out is closing the achievement gap, one of the superintendent's main priorities, and you can see that that work is primarily conducted by the Office of Educational Improvement and Innovation, though there are pieces of that included in the superintendent's office as well, her leadership activities.
One item on that, Can you give us, not here today, but in writing, a clear understanding of what is being done in that area?
Mr. Chair,
what the actual activities of the department are?
We certainly can. The next activity we have listed is leadership. Leadership activities include internal and external activities necessary to lead Oregon's education enterprise. Specific activities include working with state and federal lawmakers, developing statewide policies, conducting policy research, and serving as the voice for P-12 education, if you will. The Office of the Superintendent has primary responsibility in this area, but those activities are spread throughout the office, throughout the entire department, and to some extent you can consider the work that we're doing here today to be leadership for the education enterprise.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm sorry, but could you clarify for me as a member of your committee, are we going to get these numbers by themselves don't mean anything to me. Are we going to get FTEs? Are we going to get travel money? Are we going to get vehicle money?
Yes, we are, and actually in considerable detail.
Okay.
When we actually get the actual budget binders, I think maybe I'll turn it over to Sue for a moment to explain everything that you will get.
Yeah, because I'm not sure what good. I mean, we've gone through the. I mean, this is just coming down a little bit from the big picture, I guess.
Right.
30,000 to 20,000, but I'm.
But you will get down. Maybe Sue would want to fill in.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, right now, as you pointed out, you're just looking at things at a high level, and the department is presenting to you what it feels its priorities are at a little more detailed level than numbers that you heard in previous phase this week. But in phase two, you will get the governor's recommended budget binder. It will have numerous pages in there with lots of detail about budget numbers, and we'll be able to look at things in more detail at that time.
Thank you. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So it will have FTEs, and how much is personnel cost, how much is training cost, how much is material cost, supply cost, and all that. We'll have it. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, when we go back to the first page to talk about the dollars in a bit more detail, I do have FTE assigned to each one of those categories, and we'll provide those for you as we move along.
Thank you.
The literacy category is the next one, another one of the superintendent's priorities, and that's working to ensure that all students read at grade level or above, and that's, again, the Office of Educational Innovation, Improvement and Innovation that primarily leads that work. Middle and high school improvement is creating middle and high schools built on the concepts of rigor, relevance, and relationships. That work, too, is conducted primarily by the Office of Educational Improvement and Innovation. Ready for School are of the youth programs primarily to get children ready to take advantage of their first years in elementary school. And the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships is the office that's primarily responsible for that. Every School, a Community School, federally funded activities, integrate schools and communities. And that, too, is jointly led by the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships and the Office of Educational Improvement and Innovation. I'm going into this kind of detail just to make sure that you understand where in the organization chart these activities fit. Success for All Students contains a broad range of activities, including health-related programs, post-secondary and advanced learning programs, corrections programs, professional technical education, and drug and alcohol prevention. And it's primarily led by the Office of Student Learning and Partnerships and the Office of Educational Improvement and Innovation. Finally, central operations are the core services to do those things like accounting, budgeting, personnel work that we have to do to run a state agency. And we've broken out state government service charges and rent as separate line items so that you can see those in a bit more detail.
Mr. Press, just a slight clarification. I know we'll get the numbers later. Can you give me, since you're the fiscal person, can you give me approximately what the increase in this biennium was for us? State government service charges.
Mr. Chair, we did have an increase, and I'm sorry that those numbers aren't at the top of my head at the moment.
Okay.
But we'll certainly have those for you.
Okay.
So going back to the first page now, and what I can help do to clarify, especially for Representative Wisnett, is let you know how many FTE across all funding sources are included in these activities. For accountability, we have 61.7 FTE. For the integrated data system, the program option package includes 0.5 FTE. For assessment, we have 29.5 FTE. For closing the achievement gap, we have 10.2. Under leadership, we have 25.8. Under literacy, we have 5.5. Middle school, high school improvement, 8.4. Ready for school, 13.0. We have 3.0 in every school, a community school. 33.5 under success for all students. And 63.1 under central operations. No FTE, obviously, under rent or state government service charges.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Could you please go through the first three again?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, I certainly can. 61.7 for accountability, 0.5 for the integrated data system, and 29.5 for closing the achievement gap.
Thank you.
Could Mr. West, can I take from that that the integrated data system is probably that you have an outside consultant that's doing the work?
Mr. Chair, there is that to some extent. A lot of the work will be working groups who are comprised of people from the local school districts as well to help us kind of bring in the stakeholders and have them help us design the system.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gorman.
I think I'm still not clear on the closing the achievement gap, I thought was 10.2.
I'm sorry. I should have said assessment has 29.5.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I've got it now. Thank you.
Everybody?
Yes.
The chair brings up a good question. Will we be provided data of how many contracts people you have or the amounts of the contracts to augment these functions and activities? Is that available?
We can, Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, we can certainly provide that.
Just, Mr. Chair, to really look at how much we're spending, we'd have to consider the consultants and contracts, too.
Yes, we can do that, and Representative Wisnett, we will do that. I would ask, though, in that it actually be contracts that are related to these items. And, of course, they are already within the dollars for these items, is my understanding that you'd have. But the other issue there is that probably would not be, we will see probably some information about all their contracts, but if my memory is correct, because of the number of contracts that you have with providers at the local level, we're talking thousands.
Just the ODE, I think, as well.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, we can certainly provide that for you. I think part of the discomfort you may be feeling is coming from our attempt to honor the Phase 1, Phase 2 activities again. And this is new for us as well. So normally we would have more detail for you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add again and keep reinforcing organizationally and budget. Obviously, the budget is a document that reflects the policy and priorities of the superintendent and the agency, and it's not black and white. We have really, in our reorganization, we have strived to get more integration, more cross-office work in the agency, and so many of the activities, and I'm specifically thinking of closing the achievement gap and the success for all students, we have staff deployed from every part of the agency toward those priorities, and we can talk about that in detail at some point, and I imagine that's the Phase 2 discussion, but the integrated sort of interoperability of this budget is something I wanted to point out.
One thing also I wanted to indicate too is that I think a little bit of the difficulty, at least for me, is that This is not meant as a criticism at all. I think it's just inherent in this building, this session. Everybody is trying to use the right words. And so you have things like accountability and closing the achievement gap and all this. And sometimes I feel like we'd be better off going back to the days when GTE was General Telephone and not Verizon. So things actually were more clear identifications of what you are actually doing. So that's not a criticism of the Department of Education. If I wanted to, I'd see it throughout the governor's budget. So it's not meant directly at you. So please proceed.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We don't take that personally. I could...
thank you.
Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before you get rolling too much, I hope the detail will also provide us information on the federal funds as to, are they requiring a match? Are they requiring a maintenance of effort? Are they grants and aid outright? So if we can, you know, at some point get into that.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, we will do that. For the most part, in our department operations budget, there is no grant and aid, though sometimes we do send money out to districts to use from our budget for our staff development activities, those types of things, primarily for operations. When we get a little bit further into the grant and aid programs, you'll see that the big dollar amounts are back in that area for the federal programs and for some of the grant and aid ones, programs we talked about yesterday.
If I might add, the department has done a very nice job under the federal funds tab of providing to you a description of the grants, the federal grants, and one of the items that they have in the page for each program is whether there's a match requirement or maintenance
great.
Effort
Thank
requirement.
You.
So that's in your binder right now.
Grab the wrong binder.
Mr. West, please.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I can provide some more concrete activities under each one of these. I think, given some of the questions, that might be a good idea. It will still keep us at the maybe a little under the 30,000 foot level, but still pretty much up there. In the assessment area, we have assessment development and maintenance activities, the data collection that comes in so that we can assess student achievement, test item development, reporting and validation as some specific activities included under that item. Under leadership, I think we've already spoken about that a little bit, is really pushing the system or leading the system, depending on how you want to look at it, to embrace some of the activities that are imposed upon us by the federal government or that state law requires us to do. Sometimes that does take work with our partners, and that's not a bad thing. Under readiness for school, that's where we have budgeted our early intervention, early childhood special education program management, and our Oregon pre-kindergarten management, healthy kids activities. So those kind of things that make sure that young children are ready to take advantage of first grade and beyond, kindergarten and beyond. Activities under success for all students include health education and those related services, professional technical education. We have our work with the community colleges and universities budgeted under those activities, and administration of the youth corrections and juvenile detention programs. Central operations includes those things that you probably are well aware of, accounting, budgeting, procurement. We do administer hundreds, possibly thousands, of contracts and intergovernmental agreements for hundreds of millions of dollars each biennium, most of those going out to school districts and ESDs for direct services, but a variety of vendors receive those. And we have our human resources functions there. Our child nutrition program is under central operations. Being part of my team, a big part of their work is to ensure that local nutrition programs are meeting federal standards set forth by the Department of Agriculture, and there's a lot of contract administration in the child nutrition area as well. We also have food and commodity distribution activities where we get large stocks of food supplies, like whole chickens, for example, from vendors, and we send them to a warehouse to be processed and then distributed out. It's not a cost-making activity. It's revenue neutral, but by centralizing those functions, the school districts get a better price for those commodities. We also have, of course, administration of the state school fund under central operations and computer support networks, those types of information service activities.
Mr. Chair? I'm going back up to assessment. Under the general fund, that's the Oregon report card and the almost $10 million. And then under the federal, that's the No Child Left Behind. Is that where those fit into?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, you could roughly say that that's correct, though it's not the entire answer. A big part of the general fund activities are establishing the tests for writing, math, reading, and those were required even before No Child Left Behind. And I think this is an important part of the discussion, are an important place to point out the supplement versus supplant issue that we talked about a little bit yesterday. Because we were doing these activities prior to No Child Left Behind being fully implemented, and before there was federal money that came to us, we have some risk of running afoul of the federal government if we try and do this all on federal funds. And we can get into more detail on that as we get into phase two as well. Our, just as another point, our calculations of maintenance of effort requirements for next biennium in the department operation budgets are about $1.2 million in general fund to continue to meet obligations that we already have for professional technical education and special education generally.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Looking at the list of program units and the activity description, which of the program units directly support education service districts and the school improvement services provided to districts by ESDs?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, those are spread throughout the organization, really. Some of those efforts under leadership, or fall under leadership, I should say. Some of them fall under program monitoring. Some of them fall under central operations for the State School Fund Administration. They would fall a little bit, though not greatly, under middle school and high school improvement. So they really are spread throughout the budget, and we haven't budgeted for ESD relationships as a separate line item specifically.
At some point, and it's probably going to be when we have the ESD discussion, I hope we have that discussion along with Department of Education folks also present, so that I need to have a better understanding of where the linkages are, if there's duplication, what does that look like, if there isn't, clearing that up. But again, just trying to understand the these different layers of delivery of programs and services.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, we can certainly address that at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Senator Gordley,
For now, yes, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. It's good that you're noting those questions at this time, because although next week we will actually spend some time on ESDs, maybe to get an overview of ESDs, I imagine that later in this session we may be spending days on ESDs. Representative West.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. West, could you confirm that is ODE in all state-owned buildings? Are we leasing any buildings? Does ODE lease any buildings, or they're all state-owned and these are your...
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, we are in all state-owned buildings. Almost the entire operation is in the public service building across the street, but we have the child nutrition people because of space needs over in the state lands building.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Because we haven't done this before, I think what I'll do is move on to the next budget unit, unless there are more questions here, and talk about that. So on the fourth page, we do talk about the schools for the deaf and blind. Those two are state-owned facilities. We have the leases, or our original deeds, I guess they are, back in our offices. The schools for the blind and deaf, we talked about yesterday, about what they do, what their mission is, who they serve. You can see here that the school for the deaf has a $10.8 million general fund budget. The $1.8 million in other funds does come from the state school fund, as we discussed on Tuesday, and some federal funds from the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act are going out to the state schools, the school for the deaf. They have 100.15 FTE out there. School for the Blind, $6.2 million in general fund, $1.5 million in other funds, and $307,972 in federal funds, 56.65 FTE. And again, a big part of the cost for the schools is the residential nature of the facilities themselves.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have we fully explored all of the potential federal funds that may be out there? I mean, given the residential nature and the special disabilities of these students, would there be perhaps some Medicaid funds, something that would help with some of their services?
Mr. Chair, Representative March, I hope that we have, but I won't sit here and tell you that we have. We can take a look at that and get back to you. It is possible that some money from DHS, the Department of Human Services, does go out for those purposes, and we'll get back to you on that.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
The third budget structure that we're looking at is youth corrections, juvenile detention. Youth corrections education programs are funded out of the state school fund through the formula and the weighting factors as discussed on Tuesday. The youth corrections program is the bigger, $22.3 million in total funds with 28 FTE. Those are primarily teaching assistants and clerical staff that are in those institutions. We only have about half an FTE for juvenile detention education programs. That's to track some of the fiscal issues for the department, and most of that work is carried out through contracts with ESDs or school districts. Because of the fact that these funds are coming through the state school fund and are governed by the formula statutes, I thought we'd spend a little less time on those today, if that is the committee's wish. To change the funding for these would require changes to the state school fund funding formula. Okay. I just want to make sure that that's clear.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
At some point, if not today, it would be helpful to get a comment on the quality of the program, the youth corrections education program, in whatever evaluations have taken place. What's the assessment of what's going on there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, we can certainly do that. We've spent a lot of time on youth corrections in the department over the last year or so in really ramping up our oversight and even understanding at this point of how well those programs are run. And I think our program director, Jay Gentz, is doing a really good job in staying right on top of that.
Thank you.
Please go on. The next page, Mr. Chair, is for the grant and aid programs. There are no FTE here. We talked about most of these programs yesterday. I don't know to what detail you would like to go into any of the discussions. We can talk to you a bit more about the question around funding for the Oregon pre-kindergarten program. Questions came up yesterday. Is it $11 million or is it $14 million to continue at the same service level as we currently have? Linda Ames from the Department of Administrative Services did most of the heavy lifting on that because she's been closely involved in helping us work through those numbers in the past. It is the $14 million number that would take us up to the service level. If we don't take into account the 90% of federal Head Start funding level that we have in the past by policy here linked the Oregon Pre-K program to. If we do factor in that 90% of funding level, we would actually need $18.1 million to continue services at the same level as this biennium. And I would look to Linda to make sure that I've actually characterized that properly. Again,
yes, Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. West, since we're saying there's no FTEs involved in these funds, but you said we do have a nutritionist under central operations, so they're responsible for taking care of that money or sending it out. How, is there only one nutritionist, and could you comment, do you know how many school districts have nutritionists as part of their staff, and is it really necessary to have a local, I mean, one person can send out a cookbook or recipe, or it seems like, why would you, would the OD like to comment on the school boards having, school districts having their own nutritionist?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisman, we don't have a nutritionist on staff budgeted to oversee the Oregon pre-kindergarten programs. If I said that, that was a mistake on my part. We do have nutritionists who do work in the child nutrition portion, the federally funded portion of the agency, and they are the ones who are responsible for ensuring that meals meet not only nutritional standards but also health standards, making sure that they're cooked at the proper temperature and that sort of thing. On our staff, we have portions of a few positions that help lead, well, we have three positions that help lead the entire early childhood education effort of the Department of Education. Those three staff are primarily funded out of federal funds. A bit of money comes out of the general fund to do that, but none of those people are nutritionists. As far as the second part of your question, I would need to rely on Joyce Doherty, our Director of Child Nutrition Programs, to have a discussion about that with you in more detail, and we can certainly do that either here or one-on-one with you.
Follow up.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. And also, I guess, your comments, I appreciate that you're trying to look for food to pass out or have people shop. Mr. Williams briefed me that he's dedicated one person that goes on the Internet and looks for damaged food and tries to use that to help feed and hold down the cost of feeding our inmates, and he's been very successful in doing that with their rate. And I think one of the things that the House Interim Committee was concerned about is how many schools are operating their food service business in the red, and that takes more money away from the classrooms.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, we do have a good idea of those types of costs and whether or not they exceed the federal appropriation, and we can get some information to you on that as well.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would want to mention that Dr. Burke has been leading a task force of folks that have been talking in general about food and nutrition in the school system, and at some point, if you'd like a report on the findings of that, I think the task force is just about to complete its work, and we could share that with you as well.
Yes, Representative Whitson.
I think that would be good, but the point is, I just want to be sure, again, we're trying, the objective, I think, of this committee and their leadership is to get monies in the classrooms, and we want to be sure, I know you've got to have them healthy and full stomachs, but I'm concerned if school districts are spending money to hire nutritionists, is that necessary? If the ODE could not provide that service for all of the school districts' advice and things like that.
Mr. Chair, okay. Representative Wisnant, good question, and we'll address that.
Okay. Senator Gordley, and then Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. West, one of the reductions to the budget is the Frontier Learning Network, and I see that there's something over $64,000 in other funds. What would that provide for?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, when we put this list together, that actually was a surprise to me to see that there, and I need to do more research on that. I should have done that before today, and I didn't, and I will certainly get back to you on that.
And just by way of follow-up, we kind of touched on the subject the other day, but the Frontier Learning Network is our model distance learning effort. And by reducing it, we are, is it accurate to say we're doing away with distance learning opportunities?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, it is unfortunate at the least to have lost that line item in the budget. That rural model is, in fact, providing a lot of leadership and innovation for how we could do that on a statewide basis. We have, at the department, very little resource to be able to devote to that particular topic, and it is probably the thing that we need to be devoting much more energy and effort to. We've been working with Senator Devlin, actually, on e-learning and distance education issues. We have just issued an RFP that would call for the design of an e-learning alliance that would be a statewide model for looking at how K-12 course content could be connected to community colleges and the university system, with the hope that we can, if we have a model that we would be able to look at as a statewide possibility, that in the next session there might be funding that could be restored and dedicated to that. In addition to losing the Frontier Learning Network line item in this budget, we've also lost the Oregon Public Education Network funding and resources as well. So we are in a dearth of resource and capacity to accommodate both integration of educational technology in the classroom and distance learning in general.
And I would just add to your comments, Mr. Chair, the Frontier Learning Network comes out of a partnership led by Senator Ferrioli and myself. And it really is a rural-urban partnership linking rural educational needs with courses and activities in the Portland schools in Portland metropolitan area. And in fact, what we're doing with this reduction is turning out the lights on the Ferrioli-Bordley trailer out there in Condon, Oregon, and I'm not happy about that.
That's a personal
duly noted, Senator
Thank
Gordley.
Thank you.
I'm assistant too. I'm out of my district. I'm behind Senator Gordley and Senator Kerry.
Thank you.
Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back to the child nutrition programs for a minute. I might be a little confused. It's my understanding that if there's federal dollars coming into the low-income program, food program, that there are nutritional needs that need to be met, and I think you indicated that there was a nutritionist that oversaw that part of the program. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, the people that we have on staff in the child nutrition program are almost all registered dietitians. So they are overseeing those kind of the preparation of menus, making sure that they meet those standards. So, yes, those people are doing that work from the Department of Education.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, I'll just follow up on that. So there is someone who oversees the entire food nutrition program, not just the federal low-income program, because we have a huge, no pun intended, obesity problem with children. And adults, actually, but it's become a real problem for children, and the studies have shown that it begins in preschool.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think that's an important point. And the nutrition programs that we administer do go to daycare centers for younger children, okay, for pre-kindergarten, and so they're not just in the public schools, okay, and it's an important part of what we do. And we also have summer programs for children who are in poverty so that they don't go hungry while school is out.
And those are nutritionally balanced meals.
They are supposed to be, Senator Walker, yes.
All right, thank you.
Mr. West, one clarification.
Was all I needed to clarify, because there is value to that program, and specifically so.
Mr. West, one clarification I would ask for. When you say that there are no FTE involved in these, obviously, there is some oversight of these within the Department of Education, and so you could attribute part of your operating and general operating expenses to administering these, I would assume.
Mr. Chair, that is correct, and they do show up back there on the first page. We take none of this money that's budgeted in the grant and aid line item to administer the programs. All of this money goes out, And so from that perspective, according to budget detail requirements, there are no positions or FTE here. All of that activity shows up in the operations budget.
Can you also give us a spreadsheet sometime in the future showing of these funds how much goes directly out to school districts and how much goes to ESDs that provide the services to school districts?
Mr. Chair, we certainly can.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Just to follow up to that, I'm looking at this source of funds, Oregon K through 12, and there's, I'd count six sections, and near these last two sections where the state grants, districts, and the federal grants, so state and federal. They're a pass-through. Youth corrections, that's a pass-through. And the debt service is obviously a pass-through. And the special schools, those are all pass-through.
Mr. Chair, I think, Senator Nelson, I think that's true for everything except for the special schools, because the special schools are actually budgeted with the positions as part of our overall budget. So those people who work at the schools for the deaf and blind actually are state employees.
Then the operating budget of $90 million, basically, that's the oversight of all these pass-through funds. A lot of it is the pass-through funds.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, that's correct. That $90 million in total funds for the department administers the $6.4 billion that we collect from you and the federal government and other sources and send out to school districts. And we use it to ensure that they're meeting academic standards and their fiscal requirements.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
I think that an important point to make in the grant and aid budget item is that we've only set a target of $18.4 million for reductions. We haven't made any specific recommendations on where that should come from, as noted in the box at the bottom of the page. A primary issue that we have is that most of the programs that you see at the top of the page, early intervention, early childhood special education, children in regional programs, hospital programs, long-term care and treatment, we have federal maintenance of effort issues, and we also have federal mandates to serve these populations. I hate to say this, but the truth is the only real general fund flexibility we have here for any reductions that wouldn't violate federal law are the Oregon pre-kindergarten program, the connectivity grants for $600,000 at the bottom of the page, and the smart reader program, and the $50,000 for the summer lunch program. I'm sure you understand my reluctance to say that. We think that the pre-kindergarten program is essential to the success of students as they get ready to move through the school system. And because of that, I guess you could say we have weaseled a bit.
Thank you, Mr. West. I think Senator Gordley and I saw something similar yesterday in the Public Safety Committee, in the sense of, as we go through the Department of Justice, what shows up at the bottom of the list is all the victims' assistance programs, because those are not constitutionally mandated. Or,
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I do want to add on to something that Mr. West just said about the preparation that the pre-K program provides for the rest of a child's learning experience. But you've also captured in the box additional information that we should keep in mind, internalize, and share with our colleagues. The statement comes out of what the research shows, and that is the Oregon pre-kindergarten program, or Head Start as it's also known, is shown to have long-term positive effects on the economy, academic success, reducing reliance on public assistance, and decreasing the incarceration rate. We need to keep that information in front of us. Thank you.
Ms. Fleming.
Just, Mr. Chair, another anecdotal comment, and thank you for that affirmation, Senator Gordley. It's in this presentation, you have heard us often talk about a pre-K through 16 or 20 enterprise. Just want to reinforce the notion that the idea that early childhood programs and the early childhood system are very much a part of our success in the K-12 and post-secondary environments, and that this investment is one of the most important that we have.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Following up on that line of questioning, you know, I look at this sheet again. There's six items that are segregated out for the total that basically the Department of Education works on, starting with operations, special schools, bond, debt service, youth corrections, and the grants. When I look at that, I think there's the only place out of there that if we have to get to the point where we have to make any reductions is in operations. You know, and that's why I've had that discussion with you. I mean, how can we cut these other programs? I mean, they're delivering services to the children, and so if we get down to the situation where we have to cut the programs, the only place I see it, and so I'm looking at you have a $90 million budget, can you provide those same services for $70 million? I mean, that's... I realize you do a lot of good things with that $20 million, but I just think we have a hard decision at some point, because I don't think we can cut out any of those other programs. I just don't think there's any way to cut out of that. So we have to look at operations.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I think, again, you raise a very good question. And the purpose of going through the Ways and Means process is to provide you with the information that you need to make those kind of tough decisions. I think as we get into phase two, we can get even more detailed about the kind of things that would be lost to the state if we lost that $20 million. I was thinking of some good examples last night, probably while I was asleep. If we had to not do, at the state level, for example, background checks, someone would still have to do those. They might be able to be farmed out to the ESDs or to some other entity, but those kind of costs would still continue to exist. Maybe even be more expensive if 20 ESDs or however many you decide should actually be in place, do that work versus two people at the state level. So I think as we walk through phase two, I think we'll be able to paint a really good picture of what you do get with that $90 million, and hopefully you'll like what you hear.
So yes. Just a comment, and I would agree that you provide a lot of services, but I'm mentally making this list of what's necessary and what's nice, but... You know, and I think what's necessary is delivering the services to the children. And we may have get down to the point where we have to make some trade-offs, and that's why there's no way I could. At the bottom five of those things, I mean, I can't cut anything out of those. The only one I can look at is saying, well, those are maybe not directly related to children, is Department of Education operations. So when you go through phase two, I mean, that connection has to be made for me, because I mean, what if we have to make those cuts? I mean, that's where I'm struggling with that whole process.
Okay. Ms. Fleming, I think, wanted to respond, and is that okay? And I'll go to your question, Senator Gourley.
It's related to what...
Okay, Senator Gourley, why don't you?
I appreciate that Senator Nelson keeps bringing this back. It takes me back to the question I raised yesterday when we were looking at the organizational chart, trying to understand why there's a chief of staff whose area of work seems to be communication, supervising two people, I think is what I heard. There's a deputy superintendent. Why do we need a chief of staff? Is the chief of staff a function that serves all of the organization or part of the organization? It's that level of detail and needing to understand, again, how the dollars are being spent at the operational administrative level. And I'm just using that particular function as an example.
Ms. Fleming.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gourley, thank you for those comments. I'd just like to go back to prior to 2 years ago, there were three deputy superintendents in prior to the Castillo administration and seven associate superintendents and several more directors. And so I'd just like to take the chance to let you know we have streamlined to a great extent our upper level of executive management and pushed the resources further into the agency so that our specialists and we've delegated down, so to speak. But we certainly are willing to look at largely what you're really speaking to is the leadership agenda in the agency and the uniqueness of the agency being led by an elected superintendent does create some interesting conversations for us to have together.
Mm-hmm. One item, Gordy.
Yes.
Are you done?
I am.
Okay.
For now.
One item that I think will be important for us to understand. We really don't have, I mean, we will look at the agency very closely. We will try to examine what we believe is the essential level for the functions there. We have not been given any specific targets yet by the co-chairs or the leaderships in terms of what they need us to find. But the other issue will be, obviously, is although you do have the $90 million there, I'm assured that the federal funds have specific probable purposes that you can utilize them for, not as clear on the other funds. But the question would be is if the reduction would have to be in general funds is, and we won't get into this today, we'll get into it in detail, but that literally what functions you lose will probably be dictated by what you can utilize general funds for and what you can utilize federal funds for. So that's correct.
Mr. Chair, and over time, as you know, as we mentioned the first day, over the last four biennium, a 19% reduction in the operations, we have done most of the shifting of general fund or state responsibilities and federal funds. We've done that work to shift those positions to federal funds in pretty much every way we have possibly available to us currently.
Please go on.
Mr. Chair, I'm handed a reminder on the federal nutrition money. Those are actually reimbursements for meals that are actually served. So we take count of those meals and then submit to the federal government for reimbursement. That's why those funds are included in the federal non-limited category. It's a program that's just based on need, not on a budget that's given to us by the federal government. So I think that's an important point. And again, the meals served must meet nutritional standards. And so I just wanted to make sure that you understood that part of it. Since we didn't talk much about the other funds piece, and you did raise a question about that, I want to be clear about what those funding sources are. A big part of the other funds that you see for department operations is the commodity distribution program that we talked about a little bit earlier to get bulk purchases of food and then distribute them out. A big part of it is also the indirect charges we make on federal funds so that we can administer those in the central operations portion of the budget. So to some extent, we have maximized the federal funds there in the central operations unit. And then the other types of activities are background checks, fingerprint, and those types of activities are dedicated revenue sources for specific activities in much the same way that federal funds are used.
Please go on.
The grant and aid, I think we've covered to the extent that you have questions. State school fund on the next page, we have scheduled to discuss next Thursday as part of your overall discussion of the state school fund. And the debt service related costs for $58.6 million are just that. We're servicing debt on bonds that were authorized by the 1997 and 1999 legislatures.
Clarification. Next week when we go over the state school fund, can we also get a little bit on, I forget the exact terminology for this, but in terms of having school districts report in these various accounts, how that program has worked in terms of what your belief is in the clarity of those sort of definitions. I have heard a little bit of pushback from districts that they have problems fitting things in under those definitions, so I just want to see how close you think these numbers are to actual costs in these particular areas like school administration. Transportation service is pretty clear because everybody has to report in considerable detail there. But other areas, I'm just wondering how many people are trying to fit round pegs into square holes.
Mr. Chair, I believe we have a discussion of the DBI scheduled for Monday or Tuesday,
yeah,
if I remember correctly, and we'll certainly do that. So the last, the next page, I should say, is just showing you in priority order how we have sorted the agency budget. And you'll notice that the state school fund is ranked first among all programs, and that all of the elements within the state school fund are ranked equally. The reason for that is that any changes there would have to be made to the funding formula legislation, and it seemed like the best way to display this for these purposes. But our second priority, as you can see, is Oregon pre-kindergarten, as we've said all along. It's, I would say, nearly neck and neck with the state school fund, as the superintendent indicated to you earlier. All of the grant and aid programs are ranked next, with the rationale being that we'll start with the youngest children, getting them ready for school, and as we move along, that's as much arbitrary as it is anything else, to be quite honest with you, but we think that setting the foundation is important, and then we can build on that as we go on. We rank the schools for the deaf and the blind next. Not that we value those any less than any of the other programs, but to be able to do a prioritization, we had to put them somewhere. Youth corrections, juvenile detention next. And sort of along the lines that Senator Nelson has been talking about, even though we believe that the department activities are essential to the success and accountability efforts for the state and its children, we've put those at the bottom just to signify that we know that our work really is about what happens for children.
One comment on the state school fund. Obviously, I agree with your ranking of first, but we may actually get into a discussion of those individual items in the state school fund in terms of some discussion in terms of priority. Not so much to, in any sense, modify the school formula, but just to meet the co-chair's requirements to basically kind of indicate what the committee believes the priorities are for those expenditures.
Mr. Chair, glad you're doing that exercise. The final pages in the document are primarily our efforts to show you where we could save $3.6 million in the agency budget as directed by the co-chair. We can walk through those in specific detail. I suppose this is the best time to do that.
Yes.
These are actually not in any rank order. We have put everything on the table that we think we could offer up within the guidelines that would obviously be missed if we didn't do these activities, but that also would not put the agency in jeopardy of meeting our core mission of accountability, leadership, and school improvement. But clearly, there are some things that would be put in jeopardy if they were not on the list. First thing on the list is the use of artificial intelligence in writing performance assessments. We think that we can save about $500,000 by for next biennium by using technology to assess student writing tests. That is currently done by a group of people who know how to read and score those tests. It may be an item worthy of deeper discussion with people who are more technologically oriented than I am, but our belief at this time is that we may be able to do that by next biennium.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. West, does that include the purchase of the equipment? You're still going to say $500,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnant, that is the idea why we put that dollar amount on the list. These are the net savings. You will note on some of these items that we are realizing and being upfront about the fact that savings at the state level mean we push costs off to the local level, and we've stated that here. We want to make sure you understand those trade-offs. The second item on the list, $5,000 to...
Excuse me, Mr. West, before you move to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just a little concerned about assessing writing samples by computer. Are we talking multiple choice? We're not talking looking at essay questions and grading that by computer, are we?
It's the new world.
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, that is a possibility. There is some...
No, I don't believe that. I'm sorry.
That being the nature of the development of intuitive software you have on your computer, the tool that lets you do a word count and tells you at what reading level the piece that you have created is at, it's the same notion. It is that, in fact, the software is intuitive enough to look at the narrative and essay of a student sample and be able to tell you where the glitches are.
Oh, my.
Automating.
I'm sorry. I'm not ready for that. And actually, those software programs aren't all that great because we have a nation of people who don't know how to spell. And it's very frustrating for me as a person who really puts a high priority on that. And those software programs can't tell the difference between different words that all sound the same but are spelled differently and used in different contexts. So I would be a little suspect, and I'll just, you know, I'll have an open mind, but I have to tell you that I really value a human being looking at those kinds of things. But I understand where we want money to go, but I do need more information about that program.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I can tell you, I believe maybe a computer could probably outline sentences better than I could in high school. But with that, the spell checker usually takes my last name and makes it, it should be devil, so.
Mr. Chair, I just want to counterpoint to Senator Walker's comment, and the difficulty of performance assessment in general is one of the things that we'll be talking about when I know Representative Wisnant had some additional questions about problem solving, but that in Oregon we value the idea that we can actually make judgments about students' work in context and not always rely on multiple choice tests as a very important way of judging, making those judgments, and it is not always easy to do technically.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Walker. I appreciate very much that you are here. I will want to know, looking at this reduction, where is the alignment with what is currently done by ESDs, again in that school improvement arena, where they currently, as I understand it, have a responsibility for implementing and interpreting state assessments? What's the connection there, and what does this reduction mean?
Mr. Chair, Senator Gourley, are you specifically referring to the scoring center contracts that we have out in the ESD system to participate, have teachers participate in the scoring of our...
I don't know. My point. I don't know what this reduction means out there in the other world, the ESD world.
This set of reductions, Mr. Chair, Senator Gourley, is really about things that we would be reducing internally at the department. The whole conversation that we will have with you next week when we get into the Education Service District arena is what would a regional service delivery system truly look like? And I think there are ways that we have discussed with them in the paper that you received yesterday, a definition of a set of core services that system would be able to provide would greatly assist us. We would have the ability to, in more of a corporate environment, to say, the State Department does this set of activities, and the regional delivery system we can rely on to do another set of activities throughout the state in an equitable way is part of the work and part of the reason I think the discussion is so important.
Okay. That's helpful. Very helpful.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, the next item is eliminating general fund support for teacher and school recognition programs. Not necessarily something that we have to do, though it is a nice thing to recognize exemplary teachers throughout the state. The item after that, restructure support provided by the Department for the State Board of Education and the Quality Education Commission, two FTE currently doing that type of work. We'd be looking to integrate in different ways the staffing for the State Board of Education into the department, and it would reduce our ability to help staff the Quality Education Commission. And you can see the savings that we have there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would just ask the question, why do we need a Quality Education Commission if we have a State Board of Education? That's just a question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, that's a good question that I don't have an answer for at the moment, though I'm sure
Dr. Burke has. Mr. Chair, it was legislatively mandated.
That's still a question.
Oh, that's... The next item, extend the average period for vacant positions to 45 days. We think, based on our experience this biennium, that we could save about $100,000 by doing that next biennium. There is a downside to that because it does cause some issues with continuity and helping make sure that we are getting the job done. We are meeting the governor's administrative restrictions of 30 days right now. We stretched that a bit earlier in the biennium to try and meet our $3.5 million reduction that was given to us in the last legislative session. Mandating 100% use of online assessment testing.
Can we back
testing?
Up for a yep. moment? I probably should actually put this on the record. In terms of those vacant positions, knowing that in looking at your charts, your organizational charts, I did note that there are a number of vacant positions being listed in those organizational charts. And understanding that some of those positions may be critical to your mission, I would, however, say that since we've been given really no targets on what we need to find, that to the degree possible, it probably might be beneficial for those that are not in recruitment, unless you consider them absolutely crucial, at least to delay until we get to a closer point of knowing what we will have to search for.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, it's a very good point and one that we already have in our minds.
Okay.
The only thing I would add to that is that the org chart you see is our last official update to it that was done November 9th.
Okay.
So there have been some changes in which positions are vacant and which are not since then. Mandating 100% use of online assessment testing, that's TESA, Technology Enhanced Student Assessment, would save us, we believe, about $1 million next year. It's important to note on that one, this is one of those items, though, that would result in a cost shift to local districts and ESDs. Not all of them currently have the capacity to do online testing, and if we mandated that without shifting some of this money to them, if that was your direction, it would be an unfunded mandate. And we want to be very clear about that.
And I don't want to say this particularly for the record, but I do know the exceptions to the unfunded mandates are school districts and ESDs, plus a couple of other exceptions.
Mr. Chair, thank you. The next two items in the gray box are parts of the same reduction. So it's not both together, it's one or the other. The first part is modify existing components of the assessment system or eliminate existing components of the assessment system. It could be that what we'd be looking at, in response to Representative Wisnett's questions earlier in the week, math problem solving could be some of the changes that we made here. We do have an advisory committee helping us take a look at the assessment system, and I think their recommendations will help guide this decision with you. The next item, outsourcing all LEDs, that's law enforcement data system, and background checks. We think that we could save about $50,000. But again, this is one that would shift costs to the local level and could become less efficient if instead of this one person at the department level was doing it, if we had several portions of people doing it out at the ESD or district level. Though we do Well, I will just stop there. There will be those activities that still have to happen regardless of who does them. The next page, kind of the same thing, outsource miscellaneous trainings, about $200,000 in savings. This would result in a cost shift. A specific example would be some of the regional trainings we do for bus drivers. We do already use a train-the-trainer model, but to be able to make sure that all trainers have the level of proficiency required to ensure transportation safety would just be a cost shift to another level. So we want to be clear about that. Reduce the budget unit by one FTE. That's $50,000. The reason that it's that low of a cost is because half of the positions in the central operations are funded with the indirect charges against federal funds. So we're only about half and half, general fund, other funds. This would hamper some of our efforts to try and be more accountable to not only you, but to local districts and to our internal customers. It would be more difficult for us to provide management reports to other offices, develop the state budget, put it into orbits, those types of things. Eliminate one employee services facility team member. Again, that's half funded by federal funds. Right now we have that. On that team, we have safety reviews of the public service building. We have just the regular activities that you need to get boardrooms ready for hearings. So instead of having somebody support staff do that, we have a portion of a person are designated to do those kinds of general tasks that just need to get done now and then. Redesign the student learning and partnerships monitoring of school districts and ESDs. Save about $90,000. That would be done more by technology than by people actually going out into the district. It would result in a cost shift because a lot of the work would be more about district personnel putting information into some type of technology system rather than meeting with us face-to-face, which also has its downsides as well. I think some of those relationships district staff are very beneficial. Eliminating a support staff in the superintendent's office, about $111,000, one FTE. There is a heavy workload that have an impact on the agency's ability to communicate with stakeholders, work with you, those types of activities. The last thing we have on the list is just, as we mentioned before, the 10% reduction to grant and aid programs of $18.4 million. Unspecified, as we discussed before. I think it's important to note that we did not put $1.7 million on here for special schools, but that would be the target amount if you chose to take 10% from those programs.
Any additional questions? Yes,
Mr. Chair. Mr. West, Senator Gordon has talked about this, the FTEs. That's not an abbreviation, is it? Fully
I haven't instituted that yet.
I don't know that it's our job. I guess it is to sort of micromanage. But, you know, I think listening to you and Mrs. Fleming and your people, I think you have done a good job of reducing and reorganizing, and I know you're in it. I guess I would have to question, like, you have a director, and that director then, I guess, is in charge. I mean, that looks a little bit like layering. So I'm sure you're looking at that, or you're going to discuss that, or convince us that that's the sort of supervision you need. Without your director, you'd be in charge of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now, that's a little heavy, but I hope that ODE is looking at your directorships and positions, because I'm sure that that's pretty high FTE salary. And again, I don't know that we want to go in and tell you how many positions down in the guts of that organization. But when I looked at this, your organization, the only problem I didn't pick up the chief of staff, and I see you're offering up the chief of staff as FTE, not that person, but in the office, superintendent's office. But when I look at your other organization,
your directorship looks like that is layering of management and supervision. Could you comment on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, we certainly can. I think the five assistant superintendents in the agency have pretty broad areas of responsibility. And so speaking about my team specifically, we've got a director for child nutrition programs. She has 20 or 21 people working for her, so it's a pretty broad responsibility for her specifically. We have a director of procurement. He's our certified state procurement officer, not state procurement officer, our certified procurement officer, certified by the state. Because we handle hundreds of contracts for hundreds of millions of dollars each biennium, we have made that a small unit with a person with very clear expertise in the area, and partly in response to the Secretary of State's audit from May of 2003, that we got criticized for that.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I appreciate those comments. I don't think we need to justify each one today, but when I looked at that hit me, and you may want to do another 10,000 or 20,000 feet comment on it as we go through the review.
Mr. Chair, just one more comment on that. Yesterday we talked about the Educational Improvement and Innovation Office being the combination of what were three offices prior to the reorganization. I know that in that integration of those three units, we went from 13 management positions down to 6. So, in fact, this reorganization really does represent fewer directors, coordinators, all those layers of management that you're speaking to.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, and that's where I don't have that background, and maybe we need to say that we did reduce supervision. This was our alternative or something, because when I looked at it again from my background, I see it as a layering management.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lisnett, I think that's very important, and we did ask for a report from the Department of Administrative Services, Human Resources Services Division, and in 2002, we did, with the Schools for the Blind and Deaf, have 52 management executive service positions. 2 years later, we had 46, so we have reduced the number of executive administrators in the agency.
Thank you for that information.
Senator Nelson.
What is the total FTEs? It's around 440 or something like that?
For the entire agency, including the schools for the deaf and blind, it is that high. For the department itself, it's 254.2. Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, we also have 156.8 FTE at the schools for the deaf and blind.
So that makes the 400. It's 254 within the agency itself.
For the agency itself.
Thank you.
Clarification on that. The teachers at McLaren and at Hillcrest are not DOE employees.
Mr. Chair, not the teachers. We have teachers, assistants, and clerical staff at the schools.
Any additional questions? Did you want to make some additional comments about federal funds at this time, unless there are any additional questions about that? We got to just close to the end of that discussion yesterday.
Mr. Chair, we would be happy to entertain any questions that were unanswered yesterday. There's a thorough explanation of all of those federal programs in that tab in your notebook. If that is not adequate, or if members of the committee have areas that they'd like us to explore more in more detail, we'd be happy to do that.
And I would also encourage members of the committee, when they have specific questions, to forward them to the Department of Education, and also to, if at all possible, to let the chair know what questions are being forwarded, just so I know how much burden is being put on people, particularly those questions that are forwarded not only to the Department of Education, but to Ms. McGlashan. Yes.
On these FTEs, are the 254, how many of those are subject to collective bargaining?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, if we have 46 management executive service people, most of the rest would be.
So 46 managers, and so 100, well, 200, 208
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, it's important to note that 46 also includes the schools for the blind and deaf. So most of our non-management staff at the department is SEIU represented, and most of the staff at the schools for the blind and deaf, the teaching staff, are represented by the Teachers Association, but also by SEIU if they're classified.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Representative Wisdom.
I guess I have one more, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Do you have data of how many of your employees have retired and been hired back?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wisnett, we do, and we can provide that for you.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Flash.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, I just was hoping to get some input from you since this is theoretically the last time you'll see the Department of Education on this part of its budget during Phase 1, and the point of Phase 1 is to give you information to be able to take all the agencies that are assigned to the subcommittee, look at their budgets, and do some ranking over the whole program area. Do you feel that you have enough information with this prioritized list and the reductions options to do that, or do you want to get more information in any area?
I would say that one thing that would be helpful, I think it would be helpful to your case also, is to take these items that are listed on the page for operations and to give us just a paragraph explanation for each one so people have a greater understanding of what is included within that item.
We, Mr. Chair, we can certainly do that.
Okay. Representative Wisnett.
Mr. Chair and Sue, it's good. I think, again, because I'm new to the process, I think what you just said about other actions, I don't know the past history as far as, you know, your reorganization and the fact you might just want to give us some statements about how many management positions you've reduced or how many people you've reduced in efforts. I think that would maybe be good background as we have to make decisions. And, you know, we don't, if you're already down to the bare bones, then, you know, we need to say, you know, you went from 20 to 10 in that section or whatever.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnett, we can do that. We have, as we said, reduced overall from 52 to 46 management positions. We did have 273, or those are positions, we had 267 FTE in the 2001-03 budget. Through the governor's recommended budget, we're down to 254.2, so we've taken some reductions over the course of the biennium. So those are some general statements. We did have, during the last legislative session, a $3.5 million reduction given to the agency during the legislative session. However, I will also say I was not here then, so I've been here a year and a half, so much of the institutional knowledge is with other people rather than me, but we can certainly pull that together for you.
Finally, probably should let the committee know next week. I'll give you just a sort of a general schedule. You will see, actually, it'll say state school fund on your schedule, but it's sort of like subcategories thereof. On Monday, we will be discussing in more detail the state school fund, including from a historical perspective and looking at some of the issues in terms of just historically from changes in the state school fund over time since it was instituted, at least some comments about equalization issues, which equalization is now complete. On Tuesday, we will get an overview of the school revenue forecast committee's work, which is the committee that was set up by executive order by the former governor, basically to give a recommendation to the governor on what the essential level of funding is for the state's for the state school fund, along with an overview of the quality education model. And I know some people tend to look at the numbers in the quality education model as being unrealistic, but I do think they give you a good insight into what the elements of a school district that are necessary to provide a quality education. Also some information about the database initiative project on that day. On Wednesday, we will probably spend a discussion on educational service districts and an overview of their current functions. And we probably will not get into too much discussion about reorganization at that time because we do not have a bill in front of us at this time that would deal with reorganization of of ESDs. In fact, no decisions have been made in that area. On Thursday, we will be going through the governor's education efficiency report, which is normally referred to as the ballot measure one statement, and we will have a very brief discussion at that time, very brief, on just the start of the process on setting priorities. I think most of the discussion on priorities, it'll be very brief on Thursday, will be at the end of our overview of all educational requirements in the state, all educational programs. And that will be what we will be doing next week. Just to give you another preview, 2 days into the, the first 2 days of the following week, I have invited 8 school districts to come in here and give you very short views. We will have to do this in a very compact sense because I have to do 4 school districts per day. But they have been selected to be varied school districts from varied circumstances, various sizes, different geographic areas of the state, to give you a more of a micro view of what actual budget impacts are between the school revenue forecast model and the governor's recommended budget. So that's sort of the overview for next week. In addition to that, if we do get a day sometime free, in this process, as a voluntary basis, I'll probably try to organize a tour of maybe the school for the deaf, school for the blind, and one of the correctional facilities, and perhaps I can get some cooperation from my good friend Senator Gordley in that sense. There is some relationship to the Public Safety mm-hmm. Committee, and some public safety committees might like to see the schools at McLaren or Hillcrest. With that, we are actually concluded about 28. Ms. Fleming, did you have a final statement?
I would appreciate Senator Devlin just thanking you and the committee for indulging us, and I appreciate the fact that you've had very thoughtful and good questions for us to answer, and we look forward to going into greater detail about what the agency's work is. I want to just make one comment that I know it's the job of the committee to get down into the engine room, into the bowels of the conversation. And it is the job of the Department of Education to provide leadership in the enterprise for 198 districts and 20 ESDs. And we very much are committed to that mission and appreciate your thoughtful consideration about how we move forward in the future. We look forward to that conversation with you about the system in general. I think this is a time when, if we have to make very bold and difficult decisions about money, that we think carefully about the reengineering of the system in ways that will work better for schools and students, and keep that at the fore of our discussions. And so thank you. I also want to thank the staff. Our management team has worked the last many weeks straight, including weekends, and a staff that have been particularly in the budget office gathering detail for this presentation. They've done a fabulous job. 2 years ago, we could not have come forward on this short a turnaround and given you this much detailed information. So I wanted to say thank you publicly, and we look forward to next week.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fleming, and I'd like to echo those comments, thanking your staff mm-hmm. and thanking the superintendent for appearing here earlier this week. With that, we are adjourned, and this may be one of the few days we have half an hour off.
I didn't play off.